Open our hearts, O Lord, deepen in us your word and how that word transforms our lives and our world and the world. Amen. The distinction of today's gospel is probably one of the best known right after, you guessed it, Christmas and other major things. Render to Caesar what is Caesar's. Okay. However, like many of the readings, a little bit of understanding can transform what we believe we're hearing. So I want to start by a little English introduction. We have something called a picture, we have something called an image, but they're different. The word image pulls the viewer in. The image is movement. It is almost organic. Pictures click and it's done. Images were part of worship and pagan worship and have been part of Christian worship. The purpose of an image is so much different than a picture. You can walk away from a picture unscathed. It's really hard once you've been involved in an image. Once you see into an image, it's hard to walk away unscathed. Long ago, I had an experience that transformed this idea of image for me. Age 16 was a big year for me. It was around, let's see, truth be told, 1966. And a couple things were going on in my life. One is that I was growing a newfound faith in Jesus. That's a whole story. But anyway, I knew something was changing in my life. My church didn't really have any way for me to question and probe and grow. So I found, of all things, a Presbyterian church that had a fabulous teenager Bible study, and I'll tell you, I don't know how many times I read the New Testament in 2 months, but it was quite a few. Earth-shattering sense of who Jesus was and is and will continue to become in my life. All right, move to the secular world. At the same time, I was becoming involved in racial issues. It was hard not to. The issues of the, let's just say, the Episcopal seminarian who went south to help with the Voting Act was martyred. He was shot dead. He was trying to save a child at a grocery store. And you know how it goes. Civil rights activism. So many lives lost protecting others. My friends were aware that I was sort of bringing all this together in my life, and I wasn't shy, and I blabbed, okay. Well, on my birthday, a special friend who was an artist brought me a humongous picture. But it wasn't a picture. It was an image. It was a man on the ground, big gnarled hands, crown of thorns, suffering, and carrying the weight, the burden on him. What she had done in charcoal was to sketch Jesus as black. Boom! I thought to myself, I'd always known that Sunday schools were very to blame, and missionaries, I was very interested in missions, were also under idea that a white Jesus looking into the wind and the white skin and the puffy flowing hair, that was bogus. And yet it was propagated throughout the empire in almost every mission place. Okay, you all know I spent 5 years in Rwanda, so I had a chance to debrief my own students about their understanding, and yeah, they agreed that was pretty distressing. But there were other things. They were starting to see different images of Jesus, where Jesus, the Word, became flesh, 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 not just one flesh, but all flesh. And so they were much more sophisticated than I realized. And it became an ongoing discussion. What Jesus do we follow? Whose Jesus do we follow? So when we get to today's story, we have a fascinating lesson in the power of image. In the story, two Jewish groups confront Jesus. One you know well, the Pharisees, always picking, taking pot shots, trying to set traps for Jesus. The Pharisees wanted to turn Jesus against the Roman hierarchy. They wanted him to say, we're totally Jewish. End of question. The Herodians, however, were a split-off party, and they liked Rome. So we have these warring partisans, sound familiar, come together and decide between these two views, they would trap Jesus, no problem. And so they flattered. When you want to get someone's attention, you flatter. You say, oh my, you are just a wonderful person and everything you do. And besides, you don't show favoritism. We know that about you. You love the truth. Yeah. Okay. Then they say, what do we do about taxes? Hot button issue. A trap. If Jesus says, sure, pay the taxes, he's just alienated a large number of Jewish people who are upset, not because of Rome and not because of tax, but because this is a special tax. This is not a universal tax. They would have said no problem to a universal tax, even for Rome. This was a special tax on those who were not deemed good enough to be Roman citizens. This is the outsider tax. In Israel, in Palestine, they were the outsiders. The burden, the extra burden, was on them. It was not fair. So Jesus said, go ahead and pay it. Oh, wrong answer. If Jesus said, don't pay it, well, here we have another rebel prophet type that is dangerous and we should get rid of because he doesn't support the emperor. He couldn't win. He could not win. The coin, by the way, we still have them today. Isn't that kind of cool? Thanks to archaeology. We had the face of the emperor and his name was Tiberius. So the coin read, Tiberius Caesar, son of the divine Augustus. At the birth of Jesus, the Caesar's name was Augustus. Okay, we've got Tiberius. And the situation is that they ask, and Jesus says, just show me the coin. What's the big deal here? He treated it as a lost and found. Show me the coin. Oh my goodness. And it's got Linda's name on it. Will you take it to Linda? It's not mine. The name was Tiberius. And he said, well, go ahead and give it to him. He lost it. Clever beyond understanding. So clever that two big parties within the Jewish political and spiritual life were completely confused. What do we do now? What do we do now? There wasn't much they could do at that point, and that's why by chapter 22 of Matthew, things are really starting to unravel. The heat is rising, and the inevitable will happen. So here we are in a culture where we have pictures, we have logos. We love logos. They're all over the internet. Everybody has a logo. Aunt Jemima had to have hers changed so she could be less of slave-looking Aunt Jemima. The Redskins, well, you all know that. The Methodists made a boo-boo in having as their chief logo a cross with a flame wrapped around it. And when you see burning flames, crosses burning down, one colleague of mine lived in Mississippi, and those crosses were burned on his front lawn. So, we have all kinds of logo images. And yes, they do need to change. I've always found it interesting that in Germany, the swastika is illegal. You cannot print it. You cannot put it in a movie. You cannot. Well, in America, where we are, or what would I say, protecting our individual liberties, we say, yeah, you can wave it, you can march with it. The difference being the power of the swastika in two totally different cultures. In Germany, look what it did and stands for. In America, we don't really get it. It wasn't on our soil. It wasn't really our people. So we have a different understanding. Images have movement. They tap something so deep within that they can recreate and bring hope, or they can produce feelings of hate. An image. They also move outside. They're not personal inner things that we have, images, all these images. But a true image pushes out and affects what's going on around. So if you have an image, you really can't keep it in. It will seep out. It will have an external consequence. That consequence could be violence and hate, or that consequence could be loving and healing and welcoming. A lot rests on the image. In the 17th century in Japan, Christians were stamped out. It is probably one of the most severe national elimination of all Christians in history, even more than Russia, even more than communism. And what happened in that case was that Japan would bring an image of Jesus, put it on the ground, and force the Christian who had said, maybe in words, I regret being baptized. I didn't really mean it. They were trying to defend their lives, for goodness sake. We get that. And yet they had to defile. And when it came to defiling the image, they couldn't do it. And the number of Japanese martyrs is staggering. 10 to 12 were placed on crosses outside Nagasaki and crucified and left there. The images are powerful. They are life and death. At least they can become an issue of life and death. So, Jesus is eliminating the power of the question of the image by saying, give it back. All right, that's already fascinating. But the rest of what Jesus says is equally staggering. He says, render unto Caesar what belongs to him. Render means return. Oh, you lost something? Here it is. Done. Return. And then he says, but render to God what is God. What belongs to God? Render it, give it back, get it back to God. That's where it belongs. Woo. And now we come to what is really a great punchline in this very brief encounter. Image is one of the first concepts in Genesis in the Bible. It is so powerful. It is pronounced in the 7 days of creation. It's right there. It determines the entire rest of the Bible, including the Jesus story. So where do we see it? We see it on day six. Day seven, God rested. Day six, at the climax of all the universe, the stars, the water, the animals, the fish, the trees. At the climax of all that on day six, God says, and now, let us create humankind in my image. In God's image. First time. Something unique happened with humans in the creation story. And what was unique to humans was this part of God that was placed within. Do we have to seek God? Sure, just because it's within doesn't mean it's without challenges. But every human being is created in God's image. Many people, many deeply wise and spiritual people debate what the essence of that image is. Most say it's the ability to choose, the will. Others say it's the conscience. There's some basic conscience that is part of God's likeness in us. Others say that it's relationship. The likeness of God in people in us means that there's a conversation there. We don't always remember that, but it's there. We can have a level of conversation with the creator of the universe that my sweet dog Bella probably can't have. So all of this, the ability to be blunt and honest in an honest and truthful relationship. The creator of the universe, the creator of all life, is an artist. And we have to be breathing that very art, the reality of the image in us, the likeness of God. It is our deepest identity core, and it moves outside like images should. The image of God pouring out brings reconciliation and hope, even in the darkest times, the image. And so we come to remember the baptism. There are promises that are made at the second, not the promises of faith, but the promises of action at every baptism. Will you seek and serve Christ in all persons, loving your neighbor as yourself? That Christ in all persons is that image. Will you serve and protect the image of God? Not so much in yourself, but in your neighbor. If you can see through everything, and you can see into the image of Christ, with the grace of God, we can act. It takes courage. Like God, we should have no favorites. Like Jesus, you don't show partiality. But like God, we are pushed to heal and forgive. We are pushed to break down barriers, even barriers between those that we intensely disagree with or dislike. Rendering to God what belongs to Him. So what is that list? We know it's a short list for the coin. There you go. Done. Rendering to God is anything but a short list. Rendering to God is restoring, loving, having dominion on the earth, and bringing all things to as much as we possibly can back to their owner, God, this, us, everyone here. We are rendering, we're returning to you. We don't return just money, so if you feel sort of back in the line, don't worry. We return to God and the joy and the energy and the love is rekindled. May God help us to live up to the promise of our baptism and render to God what belongs to God within us and around us and in the face and life of every brother and sister on this planet. Amen.